I'm Larry Platt from the Philadelphia Citizen. Welcome. Can you hear me in the back there? How about now? How about now? All right. I'm Larry Platt from the Philadelphia Citizen. Want to welcome you here for the Minority Seats Council debate. A couple of things I want to remind people of, and then we have a couple of announcements. The first is that obviously we want everyone to vote on November 3rd. We want everyone to vote so badly that we're offering a $10,000 reward randomly to some voter in the city of Philadelphia. The idea is to jumpstart turnout in a city suffering from a chronic lack of participation. The precedent for this is in Los Angeles, where in a local school board election, they offered a $25,000 incentive to a random voter, and it did jumpstart turnout among those who had heard of the award. Turnout went from 46% to 80%. So we're hoping that this does something to jumpstart turnout and democracy in the city where it was born, and beyond that, to start a conversation about civic participation. So that's number one. The other thing I just want to acknowledge is I want to thank all these candidates for coming. I also want to thank David O. and Al Taubenberger, who are sitting on this chair. So we came up with a unique format here, which is no moderator, no rules. We want to go back to Lincoln Douglas, man, and let's let you guys discuss the issues of the day in a freewheeling discussion. We thought it would reveal character. We thought it would be substantive, and that's our hope. That can be scary in this age of scripted sound bites. So at this point, let me introduce, there are two other quick comments, and then we're just gonna sit down and let you guys have at it. Our partners here, Committee of 70, David Thornburg, but first, Nick Marzano from Young Involved Philly.
Thanks, everyone, for coming out and for caring about this very important election. Thanks, and good luck to the candidates. I'm really looking forward to this night's debate. And to Larry and David for coming up with this creative and, I think, important modification to our typical soundbite-type debates. This event is part of a series of events called Voter Education Week. YIP just came off of, that's our acronym for Young Involved Philadelphia, not the sound a dog makes. YIP just came off of a series of events called State of Young Philly, and we said, why not partner with a group of other young membership societies to promote voter education and get out the vote because we don't feel like we did quite enough last week. So we have a great series of events coming up in partnership with Influencing Action Movement, Unity in the Community, Urban Philly Professionals Network, Rising Suns, CrowdPack. Liz Jaff is in the audience somewhere from CrowdPack. And of course, Larry and David. YIP is running one event. We're doing a voter phone bank in addition to this event tonight. We're doing a voter phone bank at the Committee of 70's offices the night before the election. That's November 2nd, 6 to 8. We would love to invite, it's open, it's nonpartisan. Last year we had a number of candidates join us. We just got word, we did not invite this candidate, but we hear that Jim Kenney will be by 6 to 6:30. We would love to invite any of these candidates to come by. Don't give up on the young vote. There are a ton of young voters out there, and we think it's important that we continue to do these phone banks and strive to get that young vote out and set that example. So thanks so much for the time and the plug. Turn it back over to you.
Terrific. Thanks, Nick. I won't prolong the welcome, but just to say thanks to all involved. Particular thanks to these folks up here. I know we had and when I say we, I mean Larry had a little fun with this, promoting this event, but I want you all to know how much we respect what you do and the work you put into it. This is hard work, and we appreciate it. And how about a round of applause even before we begin? So the last thing I would say is, you know, Google's been working on a self-driving car for a while, and probably in the next few years, that's all we're going to see out there. So in the spirit of that, this is a self-moderating debate. Bit of an experiment, but, you know, Larry pointed out the turnout, the lack of interest that people have in seemingly in municipal elections this way, and I think we've got to be trying all kinds of things. So with that, I'm going to give this microphone to, let me do a quick intro of the candidates from left to right, just so you know who we're talking to. Kristen Combs to my left, Andrew Stober, Terry Tracy, incumbent Councilman Dennis O'Brien, and John Staggs. So that's who they are. They have a chance to tell you more about who they are, what they stand for, where they're going, so forth. And with that, I'm going to hand. But this is totally self-moderated, so I'm not like inviting Andrew to speak first. I'm just handing him a microphone.
I just wanted to, if you don't mind, I told David and Larry that I can't stay for the entire evening. I have several places I have to go, but I did want to come and introduce myself to you and tell you a little bit about my background. For those of you who don't know, I've spent over 35 years in Harrisburg as a state representative, and I was the first minority speaker in the history of the Commonwealth. That only happened one other time in New Jersey when Tom Kane was elected as a minority speaker. I believe that I was elected because I have a certain brand of politics, and sometimes that gets me in trouble with the Republican Party, but that I've grown from the time I was 23 when I was first elected over many, many issues. And I've become an advocate for some of those issues, which I think was the invitation to become the minority speaker. I chaired virtually every committee that there was in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, from military affairs to health and human services, consumer affairs, judiciary. I served on appropriations. I was the only non-lawyer ever appointed to the Judiciary Committee, and I was the majority chair. That experience allowed me to enact major pieces of legislation: aggravated sex assault, involuntary deviant sexual intercourse. I did the impeachment of Rolf Larson. I did fetal homicide. I did the grand jury of the Archdiocese of Philadelphia on the criminal statute of limitations. And I brought Ira Einhorn back from France. I also took on the insurance companies. I wrote the Breast Cancer Protection Act, the Autism Insurance Bill, and colon rectal. I also, well, it is important because, what I've done is we've created what's called the Philadelphia Autism Project. 10 years ago, we created the Autism Task Force. That serves as a blueprint internationally for services for individuals living with autism. We have created the first municipally driven project, and we've brought all the experts from all around the world. We brought individuals here from the tobacco settlement. We brought the top investigators. We now have the top investigators in the world at University of Pennsylvania, Drexel, and CHOP. We have, through the Autism Insurance Bill, which hasn't been implemented, we have the commercial insurers owe the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and our autism line item over $300 million. I also took on the administration when the administration wanted to create a private law firm for indigent counsel. That is a constitutionally protected right, court-appointed counsel, and they put $10 million in that. We took on the administration for several months, and we were ready to go to federal court and to state court, and finally the administration caved in because they said it was a hyper-technical legal issue. I'm just going to go one more. You're in South Philly. You're in South Philly. I want to talk to you about a unique law enforcement proposal. Sorry, just I'll give you 1 second. In South Philadelphia, we created a strategy called Focus Deterrence.
Why'd you vote to raise taxes?
Support education. Thank you very much.
Pardon me?
Well, I just want to tell you one thing. Focus Deterrence is a strategy in South Philadelphia.
Actually,
and what we did is we focused on those most likely to shoot, most likely to be shot. And what we did is we have taken those individuals, we bring them into a courtroom with a call-in.
Denny, come on.
Can you explain
how you were specifically involved in Focus Deterrence, what your specific involvement was in that program?
Yeah, because that's why I was talking about my background in Harrisburg, where I was chairman of judiciary, and the DAs and I have been working together for over 25 years. And when they created Focus Deterrence and I came to City Hall, they came to me. That issue is very effective in South Philly. We cut murders in half, but we did it in two ways. One, by going after those guys and telling them, if your group is involved in a shooting, then we are going to violate you on probation and parole. We're going to increase your drug testing. We're going to see if you're jacking utilities, paying child support, whatever it is. But on the other side, we have a social service outlet. And in the first call-in, we had somebody that wanted to go to community college, somebody that wanted their GED, somebody that wanted residential drug and alcohol treatment, and somebody who wanted $100 a week for their formula for their baby mama. But let me talk.
Thank you.
These three individuals. Let me tell you about what was in the Daily News today. You probably saw my picture in the Daily News today. And the reality is, it said that I did a pension grab. That money was money that was taken out of my salary for over 30 years in Harrisburg. And the pension is what it is, and the salary is what everybody else is going to make here.
Okay, so
Alan Dom's in the back.
Denny, thank you very much.
So I wish you all a good night.
Denny, thank you very much. In the interest of time, I think it makes sense for the rest of us to agree to a few norms, where we'll answer each other's questions and I'll be respectful of giving each other brief answers. Can we all agree to that?
I think that's fair.
Absolutely.
I would assume that's fair.
Yeah.
Denny, have a good night. I think we should just go on.
So why don't we talk about why we're actually here tonight? So the reason we're here tonight is because we have an election on November 3rd. And the reality of the situation is that, as was sort of alluded to earlier, there's a crisis in civic participation in the city. And the reality of the situation is that, you know, we're going to be lucky, all of us, to have 10, 12, 15% of voters turn out next Tuesday. The reality is that the people of Philadelphia need to understand. They need to know that there are two seats reserved on city council for opposition voices, for the minority party. And so to the extent that folks who are coming to engage or coming to vote next week want to maximize their participation in this election, they ought to engage in the minority party race. Because the reality is that there could be a fundamentally different city council after the results of next Tuesday. That's why we're here tonight. That's why all of the folks who are vying to be those opposition voices, those important voices of dissent, are here to have a conversation about what's at stake and what we intend to do about it. So with that, having set the table for what it is we want to do and why we're here, I think we should probably get back to the matters of substance.
Yeah, and thank you so much, Terry, for that lead-in. I think that's really what the candidates up here bring to you. We're all bringing a different aspect to that, but we're all going to bring in some kind of outside voice. So I'm Kristen Combs. I'm the Green Party candidate for City Council at Large. And the outside voice that I bring is the voice of a public school teacher and a community member. So I'm a member of the Green Party. I would represent the far left, but in a very different way from the Democratic candidates on city council right now. I'm not a political insider. I'm not the kind of person who's going to be backed by big developers, as many of our Democratic council people right now are. I'm really backed by community members. and by 15 Now and by the Coalition for Real Justice. That's been my foundation. And so my goal is to go into city council and bring people's movements into city council and be sure that people have their voices heard in city council.
Thanks, Kristen. My name is Andrew Stober, and I'm running as an independent for city council because I believe that a seat on city council and these minority seats are not the entitlement of Republicans. It's not the kind of thing where you show up and you give the same speech that you've been giving at every candidate forum and then you walk out and leave. It's not the kind of thing, it's not an entitlement where you can say, oh, sorry, I have a talent show tonight that I'm using public dollars to fund when our city has a 28% risk of 28% poverty rate, so I can't show up tonight. It's not the kind of thing where you just blow off the opportunity to actually engage with your competitors. I'm running as an independent for council because it's not an entitlement. A seat on council is something that's won on election day, but earned every day you're there. And what I'll bring to council is someone who has 10 years of experience getting city and state government to work more equitably, more efficiently, and more effectively. I did that in Philadelphia with launching the Indigo Bike Share program, with cutting millions of dollars of waste out of the city's utility budgets and bringing in tens of millions of dollars in grants. And I'll talk more about that tonight.
So I believe the city fundamentally is at an inflection point, a historical inflection point. The reality of the situation is that there's very much a sort of urban renaissance that's happening globally. Neighborhoods are being reimagined, folks are moving back into big cities. And so I believe for the first time in decades, when you consider the big problems the city faces, devastating generational poverty, a pension system that is one market correction away from being in really an unmitigated disaster, a crisis in education, a weak job market, for the first time in decades, we have the necessary civic engagement and economic activity to leverage to begin to address those problems. But the reality of the situation is that in order to address those problems, it's going to require a fundamentally different approach to policy and leadership than we've seen in the past. I spent the last 10 years as an executive in the private sector traveling the globe, understanding and appreciating how it is that local governments have a disproportionate impact on the people's lives, people's ability to prosper and grow. And so I hope that's what this conversation is about. I have a number of recommendations as to how I would like to move through that. And most importantly, I think when you consider the role that these minority party seats can play and how they can add value, and in particular, given the city's relationship with Harrisburg, Republicans in particular can really add a new level of dimension to the conversation that I think has not existed over the last 4 years. And I look forward to talking to you about that in detail this evening. Thank you.
My name is John Staggs. I'm the Socialist Workers Party candidate for council at large. And I'm part of a ticket between Osborne Hart, who's running for mayor, and myself. So we went door to door, got 3,000 signatures, speaking to Philadelphians, working people in Philadelphia, and many who haven't been able to find a job, which is the crisis in Philadelphia and around the country. I want to take just a minute. Well, this is a little show and tell. That's pictures and our program, which other people in the back have. I think there's not a lot going to be changed with this election, unfortunately. The elections are important, but in this country, elections, since Abraham Lincoln, elections haven't changed much. In the 30s, it took millions of working people jeopardizing their jobs and their lives to build unions, which made a difference in this country. They changed the standard of living of the majority of the country. In the 50s and 60s, the black population of this country put their lives on the line leading a movement of civil rights, which got many millions the right to vote, which they did not have, getting rid of Jim Crow. And then young people standing on the shoulders of the civil rights movement helped end the Vietnam War. We got Medicaid. All those things were part of the civil rights movement. None of that was based on elections or a politician. It was people fighting independently in the streets. And that's what I think has to be done here in Philadelphia. If I'm elected city council, I would help fight for that, just like the Black Lives Matter and the fight against police brutality right now has pushed the police forces in this country back from the kind of violence that they were carrying out against young workers of all colors.
So I think what you heard from all of us is that we really have a vision for bringing a new kind of leadership to these seats on city council. We haven't seen that, particularly in the last 4 years. In fact, we have a council president who's filled the war chests of the two minority seats on council, as we learned in the Friday Daily News. Denny O'Brien took $5,000 from the council president, and David O took $10,000 from the council president. So it's hard to imagine how independent they can actually be. They're supposed to be the ones who are challenging the majority party. And in fact, it at least appears that they've been bought by the majority party. I think we deserve to have people in these seats, and you have four pretty different perspectives here politically, but all of whom are committed to being strong, independent voices. My independent voice would be a voice that would be focused on education, a voice that would be focused on making sure that our property tax system is continuing to improve in its fairness and its equity, and a voice that would bring real accountability to government agencies on how they are addressing the issues of poverty in the city.
One of the things that's most exciting to me about the upcoming council term is that there seems to be an emerging consensus in civic, business, and political circles that the possibility to do big things for the first time in a long time exists. And I think a good example of that is the emerging proposal around the Leavy-Sweeney plan to address municipal tax reform. At the end of the day, you know, when you consider the situation with regard to our pension system, the unequal access to economic opportunity in the city, and the situation with the school district, the city needs to get to back onto a place where we're growing economically, a place where we're prosperous. And the number one thing preventing us from doing that is a municipal tax code that is designed for an economy that hasn't existed for 50 years. So there's a plan on the table that would allow us to do a couple of things. First is the business community has by and large agreed to raise commercial property tax rates in exchange for a reduction in the wage tax, which is one of the most destructive and regressive taxes on our municipal tax code, and also address some of the most other confiscatory taxes in the municipal tax code as pertains to business as well. And what that would allow us to do, assuming that the rates are set in a revenue-neutral setting, is bet on the growth that's already happening in the city. It also allows us to hold residential property tax rates. We've raised residential property taxes in the last 4 years. I was actually just at a senior center earlier today, and I was talking to an 82-year-old woman who said to me, you know, I'm going to visit another center. I had to give up my condo in the last couple of years because I just couldn't afford to do it anymore with tax increase after tax increase. The reality is we have to generate more revenue as a city. Regionally, the economy is strong. It is diverse. It is prosperous. But the reality is the city is the hole in the donut. If you look at the Economy League's report dating back to July, the income and wealth inequality gaps in the city are now broader than Turkey, Russia, Mexico, and China. Those numbers are staggering. They're staggering. And the fact that the business community and folks in, Yes, sure.
I've prevailed. The councilman's schedule will allow some more minutes, and I wanted to get him back up here to join this give and take. This was supposed to be a freewheeling debate, and the councilman did tell me earlier today, which I was supposed to introduce him with, that he had a previous appointment and had to leave. I just prevailed upon him to take a few more minutes. This was supposed to be a freewheeling debate between the candidates, not between the audience and the candidates. So my hope is that you'll let the councilman speak in response to questions or challenges from the other candidates. So councilman, please rejoin the group. And why don't we begin with a, do you have a question or comment for the councilman? Let's mulligan this.
No, I mean, no. What I have is a proposal to fix the city's economy. And the councilman is more than happy to jump in to the extent his time permits him. You know, I think this is a really significant conversation. When you think about what happened in the primary in the spring, for the first time, I think, since the 60s or 70s, we had two endorsed incumbent council members lose. The reality is that you may have one or two new faces on city council as a result of this election. The reality of that is that when you go through issue by issue, you can see coalitions beginning to emerge that will take us in a fundamentally new direction from a policy standpoint. So, no, I don't have a question for the councilman. The councilman is welcome to participate in the process. When he has to go, he's welcome to excuse himself. I hope he'll have us all have a conversation about this. I respect the man, particularly his work on autism, but this is a conversation about the future of the city. So I'm not here to accommodate the councilman's schedule. I'm here to talk about the issues. So, and I hope that's what we can continue to do.
Yeah, you got it. I just want to tell everybody that when I talked to David Thornburg and Larry Platt, I did tell them that I had a very difficult schedule this evening. I wasn't trying to be disrespectful. The reason I was trying to talk about my important work in Harrisburg is because it does affect the economy of the city. We are a city that has the finest academic health centers on the planet. And I wrote the tobacco settlement. And we did something differently.
Councilman, can I ask you, how independent are you of the council president, and why did you not introduce a bill to have a public debate on the sale of PGW?
Well, I don't think I'm going to be able to say anything. So the reality is we have...
I'd actually love to hear the answer to that question.
It's a very specific question, Councilman.
We were just talking about the economic viability of the city. And then I'll get to that question. But the reality is we have used the tobacco settlement to recruit the top investigators in the world. Each of those investigators that we recruited here brings multiple $1 million in grants, which allows us to drive the construction industry. It allows us to take research and translate that into bedside responses. And we have created tens of thousands of jobs in Philadelphia around cancer.
Poverty rates have increased. The unemployment rate is off the...
If you look at your neighborhoods in Center City, our tobacco settlement has
and the gas lines are exploding and killing PGW workers.
The University of Pennsylvania and the Jefferson Hospital area. I will tell you this. On the PGW deal, that is a very complicated issue. The administration did not share that legislation with us and would not talk to us about anything that was contained in that. The reason that I didn't introduce a bill is because, as I tried to explain earlier, when I introduce bills, they are thoroughly researched and comprehensive.
The reality of the situation is that we did not have a public conversation about the fact that we were willing to...
It's easy to jump in, but let me just tell you something. The reality is, if you're going to let me finish, there's three questions that you asked. You haven't let me finish any of them. The reality is, when I was Speaker of the House, we had conversations with people who lead energy in every sector across the country, and they would have loved to marry and partner with a municipally owned utility like the Philadelphia Gas
Works.
But
you denied
us
a debate
on that topic. The other thing that I did, we're going down the same road. The reason the Philadelphia Gas Works got in trouble is we never passed the cost of natural gas onto the consumers. If you have a strong mayor, you will have a successful gas works. If you don't, then it's time to reanalyze that issue. But the reality is that we have to have the fundamental issue for the city of Philadelphia going forward is I am a Republican, and I wrote a letter to Governor Corbett. And I said, Governor Corbett, you created this mess. $350 million of Philadelphia's subsidies were taken away from us. We have 11% of the kids, and they cut us by 30%. 400 of the wealthiest school districts got our $187 million, and the 100 poorest school districts got cut.
The reality is, I
have fought against my party and for this city so that we could get appropriate funding for the city of Philadelphia.
So, Councilman, in June, why did you vote twice against increased funding for the school district and send a message to Republicans in Harrisburg that you support the Philadelphia school district?
I will stand up for the kids in the city of Philadelphia.
What's your relationship to PGW?
I have no relationship to PGW.
But therein lies the problem, really.
Well, listen, I really would love to talk more about education. My kids with disabilities.
You wrote a letter.
Dennis, seriously.
I'm very proud of my record in Harrisburg. I'm very proud of my record in the city of Philadelphia.
Run for state rep again.
Thank you very much.
Look, here's...
Terry, I'm going to respond to your tax... statement, get back to where we were at.
I don't even know what I said about taxes. I'm confused about what's happening.
I'm going to respond to you on your tax issues.
Let's talk about it.
So I absolutely agree with Terry that our tax structure is antiquated. We have to come up with a different system. The problem with the current proposal to have a different corporate structure to a residential structure is that we would need state approval. And we've seen how well getting state approval works for anything that we try to get done in Philadelphia. It takes forever, often doesn't happen at all. There's a better way to get the same kind of results, and that would be to institute a land value tax within Philadelphia. It's been proposed before, and it has the added value of incentivizing development on properties and de-incentivizing blight. So I work in the Kensington neighborhood. My students all come from Kensington. I live in Port Richmond. And I see on a regular basis slumlords sitting on vacant properties and just letting them decay, as well as plenty of vacant land that developers own and are not using. And because it's vacant, they're paying a significantly lower property tax. If we were to switch to a land value tax, those problems would go away. Studies done in the 80s, which is really the most recently studies on this have been done, show that instituting a land value tax could actually completely replace the wage tax. So even if we didn't use it to completely replace the wage tax, because that would be a huge step, if we used it to decrease the wage tax on incremental steps, because the wage tax is also an incredibly regressive tax that hurts workers. It's a wage tax, not an income tax, so it's disproportionately hard on poor and working class people, which is really the community that I hope to serve. That would be a really good way to revitalize our tax system and make it more progressive without having to get Harrisburg's approval, which realistically is something that's just going to take too long, and we need change faster than that.
So I think we need to be working at two speeds. We need to be working in the long term with Harrisburg. It's probably going to take 3, maybe even 4 years to get this kind of proposal through. And we need to be working, as Kristen was talking about, more quickly on getting the value of our land rights. So we could ultimately get to a land value tax, but what we have right now in the actual value initiative, which was a really important effort to make property taxes more accurate in Philadelphia, what we wound up doing was just applying a formula to the value of the land. So you have a lot that's just south of Pat's and Geno's. All the taxes are paid on it. It's not a problem vacant lot that you would think about. It's for sale for $175,000. It'll probably close for something close to that. And it pays an assessment on $18,000. That means that all of us, whether we live in a studio apartment in Kensington or we live in a condo in Rittenhouse Square, are paying more to subsidize a land speculator. We can have debates about whether or not to subsidize development. I think there is a universal consensus that we shouldn't be subsidizing speculation. We need to have folks on city council who are going to, one, make sure the Office of Property Assessment has the resources it needs to be doing accurate assessments, but also is holding them accountable so that we're fixing problems like these.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, John.
I have a different proposal on this tax thing. You know, there's a demonstration coming up on November 10th for 15, the fight for 15 now. That, if we had $15 an hour, I'm a cashier at Walmart, make $9 an hour. If I was making 15, the taxes in Philly would go way up, and they would go way up. I'm opposed to the whole tax structure, and it isn't going to change. None of these proposals are really going to change.
No, actually, it could change.
A little bit.
No, this is fundamental change, actually.
But it would be fundamental change to get $15 an hour.
I think both are equally important.
I think talking about
that's number one proposal right there.
Yeah, but the municipal tax structure and the conversation about minimum wage are two different conversations. So the reality is I share your interest in the land value tax, and my concern with it is that I actually think that in many regards, with respect to the proposals that have been put forward to date, a lot of the costs will be passed on. So that you could wind up in a situation where it is indeed a regressive tax, much like the wage tax. The other thing is, I just don't see the political consensus emerging at the moment. However, I do see it with respect to the Growth Coalition's proposal. And in that regard, this is actually where Republicans on council can add tremendous value. And quite frankly, it's where I have a lot of frustration with the two current incumbents. In that, look, the legislative majorities in Harrisburg are unlikely to change anytime soon. The Republican majorities in Harrisburg are near supermajorities in both houses. And the reality is that we have significantly less clout in the state delegation in the city of Philadelphia than we had 10 or 15 years ago with respect to leadership in Harrisburg. Where Republican members of council can add value to the legislative process is get your butt on the train. Go out there 2, 3, 4 times a week and advocate on behalf of the city's real priorities to the majority. And I think in this respect, because Representative Taylor has already put forward in committee, the legislation start to move through the requisite constitutional amendment in order to bifurcate the uniformity clause.
Wait, Terry, are you saying that, writing letters is not enough to Harrisburg?
I haven't seen an incumbent Republican write a letter to Harrisburg at all. I saw the city council president write a letter.
I wasn't sure if that's what you were getting at.
One last comment on this, and then I'll turn it back over to the rest of the crew. I also, having talked to a number of folks in the business community, I think there's also an appetite in the interim of the process that will be required for a constitutional amendment to create a sort of special tax district that overlays the Center City District in order to prevent folks in the Northwest, Northeast, and other commercial corridors that are just really beginning to reemerge from being subjected to an increase in commercial property taxes. So the reality is we don't know exactly what the rates ought to be, will be, but there's a conversation that is starting to emerge here and a consensus that's starting to emerge that could put us in a situation to fundamentally reform the municipal tax structure, and I think everybody up here agrees that that needs to be done.
Yeah, and I think the other way to handle the new commercial developing zones within other parts of the city is to reform the 10-year tax abatement. Right now, the 10-year tax abatement is essentially automatic. If you do improvements on your property, you get the 10-year tax abatement. And while that is wonderful for every company in Philadelphia, it's really actually kind of harming small businesses. When businesses like Comcast and multimillionaire developers are the first ones to jump at that 10-year tax abatement because they have the money to invest in their property, they are able to take over the industry in Philadelphia and push small businesses out. I think it's really not targeting companies within Philadelphia the way that we could. We should reform the tax abatement application so that it's driving in the businesses that we want within Philadelphia, so that it's driving in local businesses, so that it's driving in minority businesses, driving in sustainable businesses, and that we could use the 10-year tax abatement to create a green energy hub within Philadelphia and reinvigorate our manufacturing base to create a green energy hub. It would be a much better use of our 10-year tax abatement, and then while getting the property taxes from companies like Comcast and millionaire developers who are just flipping properties and destabilizing our neighborhoods, we would also build revenue to better fund social services.
But we don't have a green energy hub now. What we have is we have bomb trains.
Right, and that's what we need to work against.
I'm just wondering I think those immediately need the tracks fixed, puts a lot of people to work, and they need 4 people on every train, 2 in the front, 2 in the back. What do you think?
So what you're talking about is, unfortunately for city council, but it highlights a really good point, is a federal issue. And the question is, how do we raise these issues in meaningful ways to draw attention to them so we're addressing them? So David O introduced a bill on a similar topic that was going to require the city to inspect all private railroad bridges and put out reports on them. Well, this is a classic move of our incompetent legislators on city council. They come up with an idea with taking no effort or time to understand what the actual implications are. And then we have a hearing where it has to be explained, because no one's done any research or talked about this with anyone, how the bill is illegal and can't be implemented. And in fact, we'd have city workers trespassing on private land, and they could actually be arrested for doing that. Regardless of whether those bridges are in good shape or not. And so instead of elevating this issue to a public discourse, pulling in the railroads and having them testify, getting it on the front page of the paper that there are oil trains rolling through bridges in the city of Philadelphia that aren't fit to carry them, perhaps, we instead have a quiet discussion about how the bill doesn't work or doesn't make sense on a technical basis. We need council members who are going to be able to deeply and actively engage with issues. I want to pick up just very quickly on a point Terry made and a point that Kristen made. On a point that Kristen made about the 10-year tax abatement. You know, one of the quickest ways to resolve an underlying issue that a lot of people have with the 10-year tax abatement is to get that land value right. The abatement doesn't apply to the value of land, it applies to the value of the structure. And when we're systematically undervaluing land, that means we're systematically overvaluing the structure and giving more away in abatement than we should be. And just really quickly on Terry's point on influencing things in Harrisburg, Terry may or may not be right about the power of having a strong and effective Republican city councilman who can communicate with Harrisburg. But what I know will make a difference in Harrisburg is having competent, serious council people who are having serious hearings on the issues that are facing the city the most. So when we have a hearing about the school district, 80% of the time isn't spent talking about cursive handwriting, and we're having hearings throughout the year. I call for my education policy paper checkout. I've a whole bunch of policy papers where we go in depth on issues on the website. Quarterly hearings with the school district, we get updates on the budget, and we take deep dives on policy issues facing the school district. That's important for the kids in the school district, it's important for teachers, but it's also really important. And people say, what can city council do? That's not the right question. The right question is city council doing all it can? And what that does is send a message to Harrisburg that city council is serious about improving our schools.
Well, and with regard to that, the reality is we all need to get on the same page. I mean, we're not even having a fact-based conversation about the schools. It's a highly emotional conversation, and as well it should be. But if we're gonna get serious about fixing problems, then we need to start being able to ascertain the nature and extent of the problems in a more specific way. So, I mean, I've been talking about this for a couple of years now. The reality of the situation is that I think the school district has made some improvements with regard to its budgeting processes based on what's publicly available. But the reality is a budget is a statement of priorities and a plan to fund those priorities. What it is not is the requisite hindsighting exercise to determine the extent to which those priorities are effective, moving the needle, and ought to be replicated, reformed, what have you. And so one of the things that I've been calling about is really having an independent third party come in and do a forensic performance and financial review of the school district in partnership with the city controller's office, in partnership with the state auditor general's office. Certainly both administrations with school district and the mayor's office should have a seat at the table. But the reality is that we're spending $3 billion a year almost on public education. And we've raised taxes four times to the tune of $400 million over the last 4 years, and we're not seeing the necessary improvements in educational outcomes, which says to me, listen, we all sort of know where the money is going, right? But the reality is it's not going to the children. So we need to have a strategy. We need to independently ascertain what future shortfalls will look like. We need to have a strategy where, to your point, whether it's quarterly, annually, I'm open to what that looks like, but we can't keep going through the charade where every August we're surprised we're broke and we can't open the doors.
See, what we need is an independent third party, an independent political third party that's run by working people. We don't have one. We don't have one now. We have two political parties and independents that feed into those political parties. Working people need our own political party, a labor party that can, I mean, the Federal Reserve just spent over $5 trillion on paper. The money went into the banks. Nobody can say there is not the money to fix the things that need to be fixed in Philadelphia. It's there. But these two parties and the independents around them are not going to change anything. We have to build our own political party that can take the reins of government out of the hands of these two parties. And some of that trillions of dollars can then come to Philadelphia, through Harrisburg, however. But that will begin to make a change. Until then, we're in a mess.
Well, John,
I believe in left independent politics. It's why I'm running as a Green Party candidate. It's why I bring that voice to City Hall, bring the People's Movement to City Hall. But speaking to Terry's point, and as an insider in public education, a public school teacher, I definitely see that our money in the public school system is not going where it needs to go.